We'll hear Universal City Studios, et al. Versus Eric Corby, et al.
May it please the Court, my name is Kathleen Sullivan and I represent appellants Eric Corley and 2600 Magazine. Your Honor, this appeal arises from a permanent injunction issued after trial that raises questions of first impression about the application of Section 1201A2 of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It raises serious questions of first impression about the constitutionality of that statute as applied in this case under the First Amendment. Now, let's be clear on what 1201A2 prohibits. It doesn't prohibit aiding and abetting copyright infringement. It doesn't prohibit any kind of device designed to protect digital material, such as DVDs, from being copied in violation of copyright law. What it does is something quite different. What it does is it prohibits the dissemination of any device that would circumvent a technology designed to control access to digitally encrypted material of a copyrighted work. Now, it's important to note that this is a statute that protects access, protects against access, not a protection against use. Let's be clear on what's at issue in this case. The studios, the plaintiffs in the case, have come up with a system called CSS, Content Scramble System, that in effect takes digital movies and puts them into a little kind of digital straitjacket. It says we're encrypting these and you can do only what we want you to do with them. You can only play them exactly as they're recorded by the studio and only on licensed DVD players. So what the defendants in the case have done is they've posted a program, not one of their own invention, but a program called DCSS, that enables users of lawfully purchased DVDs to liberate the movie from its digital straitjacket, so to speak, to decrypt it, but not necessarily in order to make an infringing use of copyrighted works. DCSS simply allows you to liberate the encrypted content for a variety of uses, some of which are perfectly innocent under the copyright laws, fair uses or non-infringing uses, and others of which might, speculatively, be copyright infringements. But let's be clear that 1201A2 is not a law about protecting technological devices for protecting against copyright infringement. It's rather a law that protects against the circumvention of access, entry into the material itself.
Well, you distinguish those two as if they're mutually exclusive. And I wonder, is that what you're saying, that it's one and not the other?
Not so, Your Honor. What I mean to suggest
here... Or is it one and that includes the other?
No, it's that they're not necessarily involved. Let's think of the analogy as this. If Congress were to have said, nobody may print a blueprint of a Xerox copying machine or any information on how to construct a copying machine, because a copying machine might well be used for infringing copyrights of lawfully protected work. Of course, a copying machine also has many innocent uses. And it's our contention here that the law is applied. It's as if the law has been applied to say you may not print the blueprint for a copying machine because it might lead to infringing uses, when in fact there are a whole host of non-infringing uses found by the district court and acknowledged by the district court in its opinion at 314 note 120. There are a variety of uses that might be perfectly innocent. So Judge Newman, just to answer your question, DCSS might be used by an infringer. It might be used by a perfectly innocent user who wants to sit at home and let's take a few examples that were mentioned.
Well, if the might in that sentence is not a far out remote theoretical possibility, but a highly likely virtual certainty, then can't we think and thinking from what Congress tells us they're doing, that one reason they passed this is to cut down on infringement?
Your Honor, absolutely. That's the reason.
Right. So to say this is not something that deals with infringement, it's fair to say it doesn't only deal with infringement,
Your Honor,
but it has a lot to say about infringement.
Absolutely correct. But the First Amendment obliges Congress, even if it has a content-neutral goal of preventing copyright infringement, or theft, to put it simply, and that's, we can acknowledge that's an important goal, it must do so only in a narrowly tailored way.
All right.
And as applied here, this can't conceivably be thought to be narrowly tailored.
All right. So then, on this part of your argument, it's that while this has some perhaps significant utility in preventing infringement, it also has some other effects which you say could have been accomplished in a way less harmful to either copyright law or the First Amendment.
Precisely so, Judge Newman, on the second point. It could have been accomplished in a lot less restrictive ways, but you can't agree on this record that this statute has been shown to have a significant utility in preventing copyright infringement. The simple, most important fact in the record is an absence. The record is quite clear that there was no finding, after voluminous efforts by the studios to stop the use of this program, no finding anywhere in the world that anyone had used DCSS to infringe a copyright. That's acknowledged by the district court at 314, note 120. It's stipulated to in the appendix at pages 334, 336.
Wait, wouldn't your entire argument and that of all the amici who support you be the same, even if the record showed 1,000 people who had their copied DVD courtesy of DCSS? You'd be making exactly the same arguments, wouldn't you?
Your Honor, the key thing to remember here is that there are many, many innocent uses by lawfully...
That may be. I'm just wondering about the significance of your saying the record doesn't show us this. The judge said it is so inevitable that he doesn't have to wait for that evidence. He's not. This isn't speculating that somebody will go to Mars.
Judge?
He's saying it's so certain. And I'm just wondering to you whether or not, even if we had 1,000 people who had done it, you would abandon any argument in your brief.
Judge Newman, no. The argument here is that Congress has an obligation to find on a real and substantial empirical record, under the minimum standard of First Amendment review that could possibly apply in this case. If you don't apply strict scrutiny, at a minimum, you have to apply Turner. And Turner required Congress to come up with an actual empirical record that the harms it seeks to stop will be stopped by the statute. That's the record that's missing from the legislative history, and that's the record that's missing from the district court's findings below, because comprehensive and thoughtful as they might have been, they omitted to find any proof that stopping DCSS stops copyright infringement. In fact, the stipulation...
Well, that's a different argument. You mean that it doesn't go far enough. I thought your point was they haven't shown there's somebody out there copying a DVD.
That's correct. But
now your point is this anti-encryption, this decryption device doesn't go far enough in preventing the things that you say haven't yet been documented.
No, Your Honor, it doesn't go. Certainly, this statute does not prevent piracy. People with sophisticated copying devices can certainly mass-produce DVDs and sell them for pennies on the street. So the statute is, of course, under-inclusive in that respect. But I'm focusing on how it's over-inclusive. It stops innocent users of DCSS, and that is documented in the record. It's quite clear that it would stop you, for example, if you purchased a DVD. You paid your $25 for Schindler's List. You took it home. You're colorblind. You want to use DCSS to download it and change the pixels from blue to green so you can see it better. Can't do that. Can't use DCSS to do that. Your daughter wants to put a snippet of Schindler in her book report, her multimedia digital book report for fifth grade. You can't use DCSS to decrypt Schindler's List even though you paid for it and use it, let her use that one little snippet that surely would have been fair use under the copyright law.
So this is the argument. It inhibits fair use.
It inhibits lawful users from making fair use of non-infringing uses. It stops people from playing the DVD.
Let's look at that. Some of the people, both I guess your brief, but along with the amici, argue it eliminates fair use. Now, is that what's happening here?
Your Honor, under the statute as interpreted by the district court, there can be no access to digitally encrypted DVDs, even if you want to make fair use of them. He has prohibited fair users from using DCSS along with
in
all the
digital, from it's using digital. The movie in its digital form.
Correct, Your Honor.
Does that stop fair use?
It stops fair use in digital form, Your Honor. It, of course, somebody could take out a handheld video camcorder and film Schindler's List as it played on her home player and then use the analog tape. But to say that that protects fair use in an era of changing technology is like saying, don't worry, if you can't drive a car, you can rely on a horse and buggy. So this is a statute in which you have...
Well, that's an interesting analogy, but I'm wondering if that really is the answer to fair use. Have we ever said as to fair use that you not only get to make fair use of the copyrighted work, but you get to make your fair use in the most technologically modern way? Have we ever said that?
No, Your Honor.
And why should we?
You shouldn't. You don't need to say that here. All you need to do is to say the statute is so tenuously related to the prevention of actual copyright infringement, at least as applied to this program, that the elimination of a substantial number of non-infringing uses defeats narrow tailoring in
no,
this
case. No, but I thought, wait a minute, you're back to elimination.
Case.
It doesn't eliminate the uses.
A substantial number of non-infringing uses.
It doesn't
yes,
even do that.
A substantial number of fair and non-infringing uses, Judge.
I don't think it even does that. At best, at worst, it eliminates the fair uses in the most technologically preferable form, namely the digital rendering of the material. That's the worst it does. It doesn't say anything about making fair use with less technically excellent methods.
That's correct,
right?
Honor, but it's you yourself.
So then we really shouldn't talk about eliminating fair uses, but that's not what's happening.
We need not, Your Honor. All you need to do to reverse the judgment below and vacate this injunction is to find that as applied to this case, the statute has not been shown to be narrowly tailored to preventing copyright infringement, haven't shown that that DCSS is used to infringe copyright. It is clear, though, that a substantial number of fair and non-infringing uses have been eliminated, even if not all fair uses have been eliminated.
You haven't told me one that's been eliminated. You've only told me you don't get to do it in digital form.
Well, Your Honor, as you yourself acknowledged in the circuit, you acknowledged in Grimaldi in 1989, and as the circuit has repeatedly acknowledged, as expressed by your colleague Pierre Laval in his 1990 Harvard Law Review article, the Copyright Act is not a protection for property that is absolute. It's a protection for a form of intellectual property that represents a bargain in which there have always been rights of access to that property for fair users. It can't be the case that that bargain is held true if the technology can improve for the people who hold on to one side of the bargain, the property side, and the people who hold on to the other side, the fair users and non-infringing users who hold up the First Amendment interest in freedom of speech on which that bargain depends, are locked into an ancient analog cage. It can't be that the property holders advance into the 21st century while the people who hold the free speech rights that are embodied in the statute...
Well, that's one way to put it, and I wonder if that's really a self-evident proposition. After all, take some of the fair uses that you and the others argue.
And non-infringing.
Well,
absolutely.
All right. The professor or the journalist, he wants to write his movie review. That's one of the fair uses permitted by the Act. You get to critique.
It's permitted by the Copyright Act, but it's forbidden to those who would use the digital form for that quotation
right.
by the
Copyright Act. Those who write their reviews in the New York Times, I take it, can do fine in their criticism using text, can't they? They don't need the digital format in order to write their movie reviews.
Oh, that's absolutely correct, Your Honor, but the right of fair use has never encompassed simply the right to state something in a different form. It's encompassed the right to use something in the exact form by which the creator embodied it, so long as the use is fair, so long as it's subject to all the limitations of the Copyright Act. What this Act does is shift a bargain that has been maintained, and without this bargain, it's not clear that copyright itself would be defensible against First Amendment challenge. It can't be that the bargain is shifted all in favor of the property holder, so that fair users are now condemned to use inferior technology. I just want to be clear, there are also non-infringing uses. If your daughter were autistic and intended to destroy the home DVD collection because of her illness, It would be a non-infringing use for you to just back up the copy onto your hard drive under the Copyright Act, but this law would prevent you from using DCSS to do that. And as you mentioned, scientific researchers, 1201A2 as interpreted by the district court, would prevent scientific researchers, even under the statutory exceptions, from using DCSS to then post information about decryption and encryption in their own websites, or even to deliver lectures in Princeton or other places about their findings. So this is a